Hare Krishna, welcome everybody to today's Krishna in Vrindavan. And we're going to be talking about Mother Yashoda's seeing the universal form in Krishna's mouth, which is an exciting event, especially for Mother Yashoda. And hopefully will be for us too. So let's sing our Krishna song. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 Rakshamam. Krishna, 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 Pahimam. Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rakshamam. Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Pahimam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Jai. So if anybody wants to follow along, the sections that we're going to cover today are from Canto 10, Chapter 7. Texts, just the end of chapter 7, where 34 to 37, and then we'll go to chapter 8, texts 32 to 45. I'm not going to read all of the texts today, but I'll just cover the basic points and the storyline. Okay, so back in chapter 7, Krishna had just killed Trinavarta. And Trinavarta went crashing to the ground, and Mother Yashoda was there. If anybody is here at Krishna House, could you maybe tell Jeff to stop leaf blowing for a minute? Okay. So Mother Yashoda was she picked up Krishna off the chest of Trinavarta, and she was very worried as usual that he was, in some way harmed. So she cuddled him, and she put him on her lap, put him on her lap, and gave him breast milk. So then he was drinking and drinking, and then he yawned. So when he yawned, she looked into his mouth, because one of the favorite pastimes of mothers when their babies are small is seeing how their teeth are growing in. So when the baby gets their first tooth, it's like very exciting for the parents. And then they get another tooth, and then so the parents are always like looking in the mouth of the baby, seeing if they got another tooth yet. I just remember like my kids, it was always like, oh, she's got another tooth, open your mouth, let's see, show people your teeth, like that. So it's very much like the parental affection mood, then the mother wants to see the teeth growing. So she looked into his mouth to see how his teeth were growing, and then she saw all the planets, and not only the planets within our solar system, but the whole 14 planetary systems from Brahmaloka all the way down to Pataloka and everything in between, the stars, the sun, the moon, the oceans, the mountains, the plants, animals, everything was there. So then Mother Yashoda started kind of trembling with fear. So was she trembling with fear because she realized that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Because, like, if we know from Bhagavad Gita that when Krishna displayed the universal form to Arjuna, Arjuna started trembling too. He was trembling in fear, and he was feeling terrible also because he was thinking that, oh my God, I thought that Krishna was just my friend, and we used to lie together on the same bed, and we would joke, and sometimes I would even insult him in different ways. We would eat together and sit together, and I didn't know he was God. So when Arjuna saw the universal form and understood that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he regretted his familiar relationship, and he was fearful of having committed an offense. So was Mother Yashoda thinking, oh no, I've been chastising this boy all along, and I sometimes chase him with a stick, and I sometimes, have to punish him. And now he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What's going to happen to me for all the offenses I've made against him? So, but no, Mother Yashoda that thought does not cross Mother Yashoda's mind, because she is so absorbed in Vatsalya Prem and the parental affection. And her love for Krishna as Krishna's mother is never diminished by knowledge of Krishna's opulence. So even when Krishna shows the universal form, it doesn't phase Mother Yashoda. It doesn't... Oh, why did it say I got signed out? Anyways, you guys are still there, so I'll keep going. So yeah, this is the difference between the... if you compare the love of Mother Yashoda for Krishna and the love of Devaki for Krishna. So Devaki's love is sometimes called Gyanamayi Bhakti, which means that her devotion, her bhakti, is mixed with Gyan, knowledge of Krishna's opulence. And that's something that, you know, sometimes it comes and goes, but it's always kind of, you know, there on either prominent or on the sidelines, this thing of Krishna's being the Supreme Lord. But with Mother Yashoda, it's not Gyanamayi Bhakti. It's just Kevala Bhakti. Kevala means only, nothing else. It's only pure loving devotion. So that characteristic of just pure love with no conception of awe and reverence is characteristic of all the Vrajavasis.
And
yeah. So whether they're parents or friends or servants or lovers, no one in Vrindavan thinks that Krishna is God. Even when they see him do superhuman feats like this, like show the universal form or like lifting Govardhan Hill or, you know, killing all these humongous demons. Or even though Gargamuni tells them that, you know, your child is exactly like Narayan, they don't flinch. They don't think for a second. They just don't take it seriously. So, yeah. And so it's in their association. It's only in the association of the Vrajavasis where Krishna can actually enjoy his most sweet, most tender, loving pastimes, because they're the only people in the whole, you know, material and spiritual worlds that don't see him as God and love him without knowing that he's God. So, like, you know, people who worship God, religious people, they know he's God, so they worship him. And then people who are not religious, they don't worship him, but they don't love him either. So the Vrajavasis are the only people that they don't know he's God, and they just love him. Still, they're fully surrendered to him. And so this love is very unique. It's very precious. And Krishna is conquered by it. And it's also that's what, when we pray, in the Dhammadrastika prayers, we sing that line, Tadiyeshita Geshu Bhakter Jitatvam. So yeah, that's what it's. So Krishna, by these pastimes, he's actually instructing. He's instructing the karmis and the jnanis and the yogis that, after many births, Bahunam Janmanam Ante, Jnanavam Mam Prapadyate, Vasudeva Sarvamiti Sa Mahatma Sudulava. So, okay, great. Very rare. You're a rare soul. After many, many births and deaths, you've come to understand that I'm Vasudeva Sarvamiti, that Krishna is everything. And so they surrender to Krishna. So that's good. But then now Krishna is showing by his childhood pastimes, he shows to these jnanis that Tadi Yeshi Tag Yeshu, that Geshu means those who are knowing, those who know that Krishna is God, or that know Ishita, Tadiya Ishita. That's the meaning of Tadiya Ishita. So Tadiya means his, and Ishita means Isha, his sense of being the controller, his majesty and opulence. So Tadiya Ishita Geshu, people who know about his being God, people that know that he's the supreme controller, that through his pastimes, he's instructing them that bhaktir jitatvam, that I'm conquered by bhakti. This knowledge, I'm not impressed by that. It's fine, you know, that's a beginning, it's a good start, but you know, you have to go further, you have to advance from that. So I was reflecting on this point, it's very interesting, because in the Bhagavad Gita, we see also, you know, Krishna starts off with like karma yoga and sankhya yoga, buddhi yoga and dhyana yoga. And then in the end, he says, you know, sarva dharma, just forget about all this and just surrender to me. And then in the Bhagavatam, you know, in the first cantos of the Bhagavatam, there's so much about Krishna as being, you know, that param sattvam dhimahi janmadyasya, you know, the cause of all causes and the supreme absolute truth and, you know, the source of all incarnations and the Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, all these things is very much emphasized. And then when you get to the 10th canto, it's just like, forget about all that. The highest way to worship the Lord is by not knowing that. So it's kind of like, it seems like a little thing in the scriptures that, you know, we go through this preliminary, understanding that Krishna is God, or that there are these processes, and then, but the perfection is to kind of just forget about all that and just love Krishna and just love Krishna. You know, like in Bhagavad Gita, just forget about karma, forget about Sankhya, forget about Gyan and Dhyan, and just bhakti, just love me. Just, you know, manmana bhava mad bhakto, madhyaji mam namaskaru. Just always think of me, become my devotee, like that. So, yeah. So then, now Krishna, so then after... So now the point is that how do we come to that? You know, now we've all come to this point, at least I guess everybody who's listening to these pastimes has come to the point of accepting that Krishna is God. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We hear that in every one of Prabhupada's purports. But now we're hearing that we need to forget about that, that the perfection of bhakti is actually to forget about that. So then how does that happen? And so how that happens is by hearing about these pastimes, by hearing about Krishna's sweet Vrindavan pastimes, where people don't think he's God and where they just love Krishna for just because he's Krishna, it's because of who he is and how sweet he is. So that's why it's very important for us to really just go on hearing these pastimes every day and letting our love and just entering into them, try to become absorbed in them and try to feel the feelings, the emotions and the mood of the Vrajavasis and all these different relationships and really let that like go into our hearts and resonate with that, because we all have an intimate loving relationship with Krishna in one of these rasas. And the more we hear about it, the more that's going to awaken. And when the extent to which our love for Krishna awakens, then our knowledge, our perception of his opulences is going to be obscured like that. So then let's hear about these sweet childhood pastimes of Krishna. So we're going to go to chapter 8. And we did the first part of chapter 8 yesterday, talking about those, Garga Muni's astrological reading, how he said that Krishna is Narayan. He's the source of all the incarnations. He appears in every yuga. Different names and different colors. And then what happened next? So this is all like, yeah, Krishna's God. Don't forget that, at least preliminarily. But then as soon as we hear about that, then we hear about Krishna crawling in the mud, getting dragged through the cow dung, holding onto the tails of the calves. And I was hearing today about how he even, he has a little belt around his waist that has bells on it. And so sometimes he's crawling along and he hears the jingling of those bells on his waist and he doesn't know where it's coming from. And so he stops crawling and he looks back, he's looking around like, where are those bells? But because he stopped, they stop ringing. So he's like, oh, whatever, it went away. And then he starts crawling again and they start ringing again. And then he stops and he's hey. So he's getting confused, trying to figure out the source of the jingling. And he doesn't even know that they're right on his belly. And so this is going on, and the cowherd women are just, they're just watching the fun and laughing at his innocence, you know, his sweetness. He's just like a ordinary baby. So yeah, all these things, stealing butter pastimes. And we heard about how the cowherd women go to complain and how they relish that complaining because it's Krishna Katha. And Mother Yashoda also relishes hearing those complaints because she wants to know everything that Krishna does, you know, because everything that Krishna does is wonderful. It's full of sweetness. And so now in this pastime, we're going to hear how it's not only the cowherd women who complain about Krishna, but also sometimes it's the cowherd boys. So Because when Krishna gets older, a little older, then he goes to play with the neighboring children. He plays with the little boys and little girls in the village of Gokul. And they go play in the dirt, just like ordinary children. You know, they like to play in the dirt and mix mud and water and make mud pies and make little, you know, houses and like sand castle kind of thing. So Krishna does that. That's exactly what he does. He gets the earth and clay from Vrindavan and he molds it. They make it into different shapes and they make little houses and they make roads. And sometimes they'll build a nice like fortress there and then another boy will come knock it down and then somebody else will make one and Krishna will go knock it down or so, they'll knock down Krishna's. And so like that they play. But this particular day, Balaram and some of the friends noticed that Krishna was sitting there quietly. You know, they're all doing something, playing together. And then they look, Krishna was a little off to the side by himself. He was just sitting there. And they went over like, Krishna, what are you doing? You know, then they saw that he had found some nice soft clay and he had made it into a little mud cake and he was eating it. So then, you know, Balaram, he's Sakya Ras, he's, you know, Krishna's friend in the friendly rasa, but also he's the older brother. So the older brother always has a little bit of a protective mood over the younger brother. So he gets worried. He's like, oh no, you know, Krishna might get sick eating dirt. I have to tell Mother Yashoda. So they go back to the house, and then Balaram's got Krishna by the hand and he takes him before Mother Yashoda. The other friends are there too because they want to see what's going to happen, how Mother Yashoda is going to react, and what Krishna's going to do. So Balaram tells him, yeah. So that's here in the. I'll read this verse because it's a nice verse. Text 32. Reading text 32 out of chapter 8. Ekada kridamanaste Ramadya gopadarakaha Krishnamridam bakshitavan iti matre nyavedayan. To hear the word, this is Balaram's complaint. Krishnamridam bakshitavan. Tavan. So Krishna is Krishna, and then mridam means clay, just like mridanga. So mrida means clay, and anga means limbs or body. So the mridanga is the mridanga's body is made out of clay. It's made out of mrida anga. So he's saying this, Krishna, mridam bakshitavan. So bakshish means food, means eating. There's Krishna's. He's been taking this mrida clay as his bakshish, as his food. And that's the complaint. So, why was Krishna eating clay? Different people say different things. So, some say that Krishna was eating clay to reciprocate with Mother Earth, Bhumi Devi, because she's also a devotee, Mother Bhumi. And some people say that it's to glorify the dust of Vraj, of Krishna's holy land of Vraj. That the dust of Raj is so pure and transcendental that you can eat it. And devotees sometimes do eat, they take a little dust of Vrindavan, you know, they eat that dust a little bit. So that could be a reason. Some say that it's to purify the whole universe for the benefit of all the souls in this universe, just like when we offer bhoga to Krishna. And then he eats it, so it becomes sanctified food, right? It becomes prasadam, it becomes purified. And when we eat that, it purifies us. So because Krishna ate the dirt of the universe, then the whole universe became prasadam. The whole universe became sanctified. So those are some reasons for why, you know, devotees may comment on why Krishna ate dirt. But from Krishna's point of view, he's not seeing it like that. He's just being a baby, and that's what babies do. They make mud pies, and sometimes they eat them. So Balaram's concerned, and he takes Krishna to Mother Yashoda. And this pastime is really like, it's really nourishing Mother Yashoda's love for Krishna. So somebody might wonder, well, how is it that she's loving Krishna more by him eating dirt? Because, you know, if Krishna's just doing everything nice, then she's just going to go about her household duties and things. But if he's going to be naughty, then she has to stop everything. She has to take him by the hand. She has to, you know, scold him and correct him and question him and all that. So it intensifies the interaction. And it's the kind of interaction that's really unique to Vatsalya Prem. It's parental affection. And that's really like where the mother comes in, you know, is when the child is naughty, the mother has to deal with it. So Mother Yashoda is in ecstasy, you know, having this situation where she has to, you know, hold on to Krishna so he doesn't run away and just, you know, interrogate him, you know, what is this, you know, you restless child. She says, I make so many nice sweets for you. Why are you going off and eating dirt? You know, what's wrong with you? So like that, she's kind of scolding him. And then Krishna, he's responding like an ordinary child. I mean, if he was going to play the part of God, he could do many things, but he's just being an ordinary child. And by his response, he's also increasing Mother Yashoda's motherly affection for him. So what he does is like, you know, like often small children, if they get caught out doing something and they know they're in trouble and they know they're going to get, you know, grounded or slapped or closed in their room or something like that, then they'll tell a lie to avoid getting in trouble. So that's what Krishna does. He says, I didn't eat dirt. Balaram's lying. All these boys are lying. So then we can reflect, we can think about this, that who's actually lying here? Somebody's got to be lying, right? Because one's saying he ate dirt and he's saying, I didn't eat dirt. So the cowherd boys can't be lying because the scriptures say that they are krita punya punjaha, that they, the cowherd boys gained that position as being, of being able to play with Krishna after doing punya punjaha, after doing punya or pious activities for many, many lifetimes, you know, perfect truthfulness for many, many lifetimes. So they're not going to be inclined to lie. And then at the same time, Krishna, he's param sattvam. He's the supreme absolute truth. So how can he lie? Krishna's the absolute truth. He's satya sankalpa. Whatever he desires becomes a reality. And whatever he says has to become true. So then the conclusion is that nobody's lying. And how is it that they're both saying completely contradictory things, but nobody's lying? So everybody's speaking the highest truth, because the highest truth is not truthfulness. The highest truth is love. And Krishna's lying, his childish lying out of fear of being punished, is nourishing Yashoda's parental love. It's heightening, again, heightening even more the emotional intensity of the exchange. So then it continues. Mother Yashoda says, now she's going to challenge Krishna. Okay, well, if you didn't eat dirt, then open your mouth and show me. So she's expecting to see some little, like, you know, mud between Krishna's newly grown teeth. It's a little mud in the corners of his mouth. So then Krishna, he's not thinking. So Krishna's totally in the mood of being a small child. He's not thinking, all right, now I'm God. I'm going to show my universal form. I'm going to trick her or I'm going to test her. Sometimes it's interpreted like that, but Krishna's not in that mood. He's not doing it. He's just opening his mouth because his mother's telling him to. And he doesn't really have much choice because she's got him by the hand. She's pretty upset and she's demanding he opens his mouth. And he's just said that he didn't eat dirt. So if he doesn't open his mouth, that's going to make him look really guilty. So he has to open his mouth. And that's why he opens his mouth. But Krishna's energies are always eager to serve him. So, before, when Krishna went to complain that when Balaram went to complain to Yashoda that Krishna was eating dirt, that was Krishna's Lila Shakti, you know? I mean, Krishna does, they do so many naughty things all day. But Krishna's Lila Shakti, which is one aspect of his Yogamaya potency, inspired Balaram, go and complain about this one today. So then he complained. So That was Lila Shakti. Now there's another Shakti at work that wants to serve Krishna, and that is Krishna's Aishvarya Shakti, the energy of majesty and opulence. So this Aishvarya Shakti is not very happy in Vrindavan because it's basically unemployed because Krishna doesn't usually want to show his Aishvarya features in Vrindavan. So the Aishvarya Shakti is always just looking for some little way that it can serve Krishna. And now it finds an opportunity. So the Aishvarya Shakti is thinking, all right, here's my chance. I'm going to save Krishna from getting in trouble. I'm going to prove that Krishna is not a liar. So then when Krishna opens his mouth, then the Aishvarya Shakti manifests all the universes again, you know, all the planetary systems and the mountains and the rivers and the oceans and all the different animals and all the trees. And beyond that, this time Mother Yashoda sees even more. She sees even herself and Nandamaraj. She sees the whole Vrindavan Dham there in Krishna's belly. And she even sees, she sees herself and she sees Krishna. She sees even the scene of her looking inside Krishna's mouth. And so this was all manifested by the Aishvarya Shakti. Of course, Krishna could have done it himself, but he didn't want to because the whole reason he takes this human form in Vraj is to relish these sweet, playful pastimes. Because if you think about it, these sweet childhood pastimes, the sweet Vrindavan pastimes, where no one knows that Krishna is God, these are the real opulences of Krishna. Because when we look at the 64 qualities, transcendental qualities of Krishna, 50 of those can be had by any soul, even us. Any jiva can have 50 of those qualities. Maybe not like to the extent that Krishna has them, but can have them. And then 5 of those qualities can be had by Lord Shiva and other demigods. And then 5 more of those qualities can be had by any of the Vishnu Tattva incarnations, Narayan or Vishnu or Narsingadev, any of them. But there are 4 qualities that only Krishna has, special, unique qualities. So those are the real opulences of Krishna. And they all have to do with his sweetness. In order for any of those opulences to display themselves, there can't be any conception of Krishna being God. And they manifest in Vrindavan. So those are Rupa Madhuri, Krishna's sweet form, his sweet, beautiful form, his cute child form, which is the sweetest form of all. His Venu Madhuri, the sweetness of the sound of his flute. Venu means flute. And then Lila Madhuri means his sweet transcendental pastimes. So the sweet pastimes all take place in Vrindavan. And then Prema Madhuri. Prema means love. So that Krishna is always surrounded by his sweet, loving devotees. And these Madhuri, the sweetness, is really who Krishna is. You know, like that song, Madhuradipater Akilam Madhuram. That everything is sweet about the emperor of sweetness. And that emperor of sweetness is Krishna. And he relishes his sweetness. These are the most relishable. Krishna's a supreme enjoyer. And what he enjoys most is these 4 things. The sweetness of his pastimes in Vrindavan with his sweetest loving devotees. So Mother Yashoda saw this universal form in Krishna's belly, and it confirms what we sing in the Dhammadharastika. You know, we sing, Twadiya Dharayata Vishvasya Dhamne. So Twadiya again means your, and then Udaraya means your belly. Udara means belly. And then Vishvasya Dhamne. So Dhamne means the shelter, and Vishvasya means of the entire universe. That Krishna's belly is the abode of the entire universe. And Yashoda saw it. That it's not just that she saw in his mouth, she saw his belly. She saw inside his belly. So this vision of the universal form is actually meant for the Shanta Bhaktas, those who are, their relationship with Krishna is in neutrality. So in Krishna's pastimes, there's something for everyone, the Shanta Bhaktas, the Dasya Bhaktas, the Sakya Bhaktas, the Vatsalya Bhaktas, and the Madhurya Bhaktas. In Krishna's pastimes, everybody can pick out something which appeals to them. So this exhibition of the universal form was for the benefit of the Shanta Bhaktas. It wasn't for Mother Yashoda. So when Mother Yashoda, it's like when somebody offers you something that's not really according to your taste, you just don't pay much attention to it. It's like, nah, no thanks. And you just, you zero in on what you like. So Mother Yashoda saw that and she's like, nah, that's not for me. So let's see, how did Mother Yashoda react? So first of all, she's thinking, is this a dream? She asks herself. And then she reasons, no, it can't be a dream because my eyes are open. I'm not sleeping. It can't be a dream. And then she says, well, is it an illusion that's created by the demigods? And then she thinks, no, I don't think so, because why would the demigods bother with, to put an insignificant village woman like me in illusion? Like, why would they waste their time messing with me? Then she says, well, have I gone crazy? Am I mentally deranged? And then she's like, no, my mind is general. It's always been in good working order. And then finally she says, well, is this the mystic power of my son, Krishna? Like Garga Muni said that he's like Narayan. So maybe this is what he was talking about. Then she says, no, how could that be? My son depends on me just to feed him and take care of him. What mystic powers does he have? He can't even feed himself. So that's how she thinks. And then she says, actually, it's Lord Vishnu who's feeding and caring for all of us. I shouldn't be so proud. I shouldn't think that I'm caring. Actually, it's Lord Vishnu. Everything is just happening by the mercy of Lord Vishnu. And therefore, I'm just going to offer my obeisances to him. And she prays to Lord Vishnu and she begs for his protection for her child. So that's ultimately Mother Yashoda's reaction, which is her usual reaction. Either she's calling for the Brahmins, which maybe she does, or she's praying to Lord Vishnu to protect Krishna. And this is very instructive for us, that if we have some problem in our lives, if we have some situation that we just can't solve, we can't change, we can't understand, like, why is this happening to me? And we can't do anything about it. We just have to follow the example of Mother Yashoda and take shelter of the Lord. And with with this mood of surrender that let thy will be done. And then our position will be secure. So it's interesting here, though, with Mother Yashoda, because for a second she gets kind of philosophical. And, she at that point when she prays to Lord Vishnu and she thinks, oh, it's Lord Vishnu that's maintaining everybody, she kind of gives up all her conceptions of I, me, and mine, and she just totally surrenders to Vishnu that everything is yours, Lord Vishnu. I'm yours. And Nanda Maharaj is not my husband. He's just your servant. Krishna is not my son. He also belongs to you. The cows are not my livestock. Everything just belongs to you. So this is actually that Krishna inspires her to speak like this for our instruction, because all these attachments to possessions and to bodily relationships are very strong. And it's a very hard lesson to learn. Detachment from these things is one of the hardest lessons for us to learn in our lives. And therefore, this kind of instruction is repeated in various scenarios throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. And here, even Mother Yashoda's instructing us, that these relationships are temporary. And for us, what she's saying is true. Everything is Lord Vishnu. But for her, it's not actually even true because Nanda Maharaj is her eternal husband. It's not a temporary relationship. Krishna is her eternal son. It's not a bodily relationship. And even her sense of possessiveness of Krishna is it's an eternal feature of her ecstatic love for Krishna. and it's glorious. So then in the very next moment, I mean, that's just like a fraction of a second where she's feeling like that. And she becomes a little detached, but then immediately she forgets all her philosophy and she just is overwhelmed again with maternal affection for Krishna. And then she's just like, oh, whatever it is, Krishna's my baby. And she takes him in her arms and she gives him a big hug. And yeah, everything's okay. It's all over. Yeah. She forgets everything. It says here that the conclusion here is in text 44, immediately forgetting Yogamaya's illusion that Krishna had shown the universal form within his mouth, Mother Yashoda took her son on her lap as before, feeling increased affection in her heart for her transcendental child. So yeah, just as a person wakes up from a dream and immediately forgets everything that you dreamed about, Yashoda completely forgot about that universal form. It was just like, it was gone. It was no longer a part of her reality. So, yeah. And there's a little conclusion verse here, text 45. The glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are studied through the three Vedas, the Upanishads, the literature of Sankhya Yoga and other Vaishnava literatures. Yet Mother Yashoda considered that Supreme Person her ordinary child. So, Mother Yashoda ki jai. All right, I talked a lot. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Something they would like to share? Any reflections on this pastime? We have 13 minutes.
I have a question.
Yeah, Evan.
Do the residents of Vrindavan or Golok Vrindavan, do they know that they're spiritual beings? Or do they not think about it? And also, like, I can ask my other question after that.
I mean, I'm not really sure what they think. I mean, I know that, you know, they do worship the Lord. They do worship Lord Vishnu. So they must have this, and they definitely have the sense that, you know, they understand that because they do astrology and things. Like when Krishna's born, they get someone to do the astrology. So they have this conception that people have past lifetimes and, you know, they're trying to be, you know, do their prescribed duties and worship the Lord so that they'll get, you know, a better life and all that. So there is this notion that we're eternal spiritual souls. And yeah. So yeah, they know that they're spiritual souls.
Well, like,
but even if they would identify with the body, their bodies and souls are the same.
So, yeah, do they know that?
I don't think they know that. Because Mother Yashoda, we just heard how Mother Yashoda was saying that she just thinks she thinks Krishna is an ordinary child, she also thinks that she's just an ordinary village woman. You know, just an ordinary, simple cowherd woman. Like, why would the demigods bother, you know, putting me into, doing some spell on me? Like, I'm nobody. You know, they got much more important people to worry about than me. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you. My other question was, so did Krishna, like, not plan these pastimes? He just had, like, Yogamaya plan them? Does he, like, he just, yeah.
Yeah, Krishna doesn't plan his pastimes.
So he doesn't arrange these. It's like Vrinda Devi or Bhakti.
His energies do everything. His energies understand his desires and they just make everything happen. You know, they do everything to facilitate his loving exchanges with devotees and at the same time enable his purposes of, you know, killing the demons. And just giving pleasure to devotees, displaying his own eternal pastimes to attract the conditioned souls, and yeah, just all the reasons they know why Krishna comes and all the things he wants to achieve, and they just act in inconceivable ways to make that all happen. And the way they act is inconceivable to the Vrajavasis and even to Krishna himself, because Krishna doesn't want to know. because that would take the fun out of it for him. Avatar Krishna Prabhu, you have a question? Just please unmute yourself. And if you can turn on your video, then everybody can also see you.
Well, video is not working because of bandwidth.
Fine, so, go ahead then.
Question was more from a standpoint of we are Prakriti, we are female, and Krishna is male.
Yeah.
That was not the question. Sorry. Different question. So question was, these leelas of Krishna, they are also representative of his 64 qualities.
Yeah.
How do you define, how do you understand which leela pertains to which quality of his? How do you connect the two? Is there an easy, I don't know, some type of a table of content which will help? Here is the quality and here is the leela that pertains to.
Well, Krishna, I mean, he exhibits many different qualities in each leela. In any one of his leelas, he exhibits so many different transcendental qualities. So it's not that, he may not necessarily exhibit all of them in every leela, but, you know, there's always a mix.
How do you understand which quality is? I'm trying to understand from, in another group, we are basically talking about different qualities of Krishna and give examples. And listening to this, I am trying to understand, we want to keep his leelas in our mind, and it would be nice to also understand which leela displays what.
You know what you can do is, Rupa Goswami, he breaks that all down for us. If you look at the Nectar of Devotion, I think it's chapter 20, start from chapter 20, and it goes through a few chapters after that. It's all of Krishna's qualities.
Right.
He goes into detail. He lists every quality, and then he explains the quality a little bit, expands on it a little, and then he gives many different references from Bhagavatam and other scriptures to pastimes where Krishna exhibits that quality.
So you gave me a homework, which I'm going to give to the other group members. Okay, if you were to talk about this quality and explain from the book, also share some leela so we can have some pastime understanding about which leela pertains to us. Okay, thank you. You gave me a good idea.
Jai. Any other questions? I wonder if anybody's online with a question.
I have something in the chat.
Oh, yeah? Oh, but yeah, there's something in the chat. Let me see. This is from, Evan's chatting in the chat. Do Krishna's energies also arrange things for jivas? We say everything is Krishna's arrangement, but is it really his energies arranging based on his desire? Yeah, I mean, like, you know, for people who are not devotees, then, you know, Maya. Maya is Krishna's external energy. She's making arrangements for them. But for people who are devotees, then, you know, it's the Daivi Shakti. It's Krishna's divine energy that they're under the shelter of, under the protection of. And those energies are working. Krishna has so many energies, you know, Parasya Shaktir Vivadaya Shruyate. There's diverse, unlimited energies, and they all act in different ways. So it's really kind of inconceivable to us, but we can rest assured that Krishna's energies are arranging everything for the jivas. Yeah. Okay.
Sorry, things are very loud right now.
Oh, are you on the side porch?
Yes.
I'm just seeing if anybody's... Oh, how do I see that? Sorry, I'm not very good at this. Anyways, it's okay. All right, well, if there's no more questions, then we can stop because we're going to have Dhammadrasika in a few minutes, so everyone can get set up for that. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Krishna in Vrindavan ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Premanand Hari Bol.